On the Nonlinear Healing Podcast, we talk about all the aspects of healing. The beautiful parts and the painful parts, too. We acknowledge that healing is not linear, and there are many ups and downs in every person's story. And in fact, we celebrate the messy parts just as much as the pretty parts. This is Nonlinear Healing with Courtney Brooke. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Nonlinear Healing with Courtney Brooke. I'm your host, Courtney Brooke. I am so excited to share with you all today's interview with Kevin Palmieri, who is a public speaker, a fellow podcaster, and a coach and consultant. But before we get started on today's interview, I wanted to take a moment to give you all a couple of updates and talk about some of the upcoming events. So I am excited to announce that the Nonlinear Healing Podcast is going to be expanding beyond just interviews. So up until this point, other than like one bonus interview I threw in back in December, it has entirely been made up of these interview style podcasts that are designed to highlight the peaks and pits of others' lives, entirely comprised of fellow survivors and recovered persons and things like that. So while I'm very passionate about that, and I do think that it's important to talk about survivorship, I am going to be gearing away from just talking about survivorship and leaning more into the thriving aspect of what it means to move beyond surviving. So I have been working my way through a book. It's called Women Who Run with the Wolves. It's by Dr. Clarissa Estes, and it is an incredible read. And there was a passage that really spoke to me and impacted me when I read it. It's really inspired me to take more of a multifaceted approach to expressing myself. While I am a survivor, and it's a very important part of my journey, I found that I have relied too heavily on that aspect of me. So to really give you guys a sense about why it is that I want to gear away from this, I'm going to share with you a passage from her book. Being able to say that one is a survivor is an accomplishment. For many, the power is in the name itself. And yet comes a time in the individuation process when the threat or trauma is significantly past. Then it is time to go to the next stage of survivorship, to healing and thriving. If we stay as survivors only, without moving to thriving, we limit ourselves and cut our energy to ourselves and our power in the world to less than half. One can take so much pride in being a survivor that it becomes a hazard to further creative development. Some people are afraid to continue beyond survivor status, for it is just that, a status, a distinguishing mark, a damn straight, bet your buttons, better believe it, accomplishment. Instead of making survivorship the centerpiece of one's life, it is better to use it as one of many badges, but not the only one. Humans deserve to be dripping in beautiful remembrances, medals, and decorations for having lived, truly lived, and triumphed. Once the threat is past, there is a potential trap in calling ourselves by names taken on during the most terrible times of our lives. It creates a mindset that is potentially limiting. It is not good to base the soul identity solely on the feats and losses and victories of the bad times. While survivorship can make a woman tough as beef jerky, at some point, allying with it exclusively begins to inhibit new development. When a woman insists, "I am a survivor," over and over and over again, once it is past its time and usefulness, the work ahead is clear. We must loosen the clutch on the survivor archetype. Otherwise, nothing else can grow. I liken it to a tough little plant that managed, without water, sunlight, nutrients, to send out a brave and ornery little leaf anyway, in spite of it all. But thriving means, now that the bad times are behind, to put ourselves into occasions of the lush, the nurturative, the light, and there to flourish, to thrive with bushy, shaggy, heavy blossoms and leaves. It is better to name ourselves names that challenge us to grow as free creatures. That is thriving. That is what is meant for us. I'll tell you what, when I read that, I felt it hit me right in my heart. I have been thriving in my life. I'm honestly in the best fucking chapter. I have flourished and grown and evolved so drastically. And yet, I find in many of these episodes that I'm not highlighting that nearly as much as I need to. Is it important to talk about the times that hurt? Sure. But it's even more important that I focus on sharing with you all the things that I'm doing that are helping me to thrive in my life in hopes that you too can find this place. So, Courtney's a survivor, but she's also a spiritual guide and a mentor. She's also a wife and a mother and a friend and a leader and a whole lot of other things as well. So you're going to hear me talk more and more about that. Expect some solo episodes, expect some episodes around different spiritual practices, also around self-help tools, things like that. So we're shifting, we're growing, we're evolving, as all things should and as all things do. I'd like to tell you all a little bit about some of the events coming up in May. So if you haven't heard already, Serenity Hill Counseling and Wellness in Connellsville is taking over Coffee at Crawford on Saturday, May 20th from 10 to 4. The Spring into Wellness event will feature all different types of vendors. We're also going to have different workshops, and I'll be leading a guided meditation at 11 a.m. This is all about cultivating wellness. So we're going to be going through some body movement. I'll be leading you through some breath work, a guided meditation and visualization practice, and then we'll wrap everything up with a little bit of journaling and some open discussion. I'd love for you to join us, and I hope to see you there. As part of the Spirituality 101 series at the Space in Greensburg, I will be hosting the Lunar Magic Workshop on Sunday, May 21st at 10 a.m. Join us for a magical morning of learning more about lunar cycles, how to harness the magic of the moon. We're also going to be talking about eclipse seasons. I'll talk a little bit about the Sabbats and learning how you can work with the energies rather than letting the energies sort of work you. Also, the Curio Coven will be held that same day in the evening at Ms. Jones Curio in Greensburg as well. Now, the 7 p.m. session sold out in less than 12 hours, so we went ahead and opened up a 5 o'clock session as well. Now, that session only has a handful of slots left, so if you'd like to join us, I encourage you to go grab your ticket. Join us for a magical evening. We will also be talking a little bit about lunar magic, but that is more of a ritualistic sort of group. So we go through a new moon ritual every single month together where we harness the magic in a group. So we'd love to have you join and reach out if you have any questions about any of those events. All right. Now for today's interview, we are going to hear from Kevin Palmieri. He is the CFO, founder, and co-host of Next Level University, a global top 100 self-improvement podcast with over 1,200 episodes that reaches over 750,000 people. He has his own life experience in using holistic self-improvement to change his life, and he now teaches others how to get to the next level in their lives. So without further ado, let's welcome Kevin Palmieri to the Nonlinear Healing Podcast. Welcome, Kevin, to the Nonlinear Healing Podcast.
Courtney, thank you so very much for having me. I appreciate it, and I am excited to dive in.
I am as well.
Now, I know that you, like all of my guests, have quite a story as far as your journey. And I would love for you to start by just setting the stage for us a little bit and telling us about your childhood and the home that you were born into.
Yeah. So I was born, 1989 is when I was born. I was born in a small town called Milford, Massachusetts. And I was raised by my mom and my grandmother. So one of the interesting, important parts of my story is I didn't know my dad. I didn't end up meeting my dad until I was 27. So I'm happy to dive into that when we get to that point in time. But I grew up in a household where there wasn't a ton of money. So I was raised by my mom and my grandmother, but there was often conversations of, you know, we're not really sure how we're going to pay rent. We were definitely a lower middle-class family. And other than that, though, I don't really think I understood that as a child. I mean, I had nice things. I never went hungry. My mom always made sure of that. So I would ride my bike with my friends when I was really young, and we'd play outside and we'd sled at the park, you know, all things considered. And I know normal is a relevant term to you, depending on what normal is, but I had a pretty normal childhood. And that was kind of it. I mean, I played with my friends and I hung out, nothing too crazy. And yeah, then things started to shift a little bit as I got older. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, especially when I was young. I mean, I had those thoughts of, I want to be a police officer. I want to be a firefighter. I wanted to be a professional wrestler for a while. So I watched a lot of wrestling. But then, you know, you get older and things start to resonate with you in a different way. And when I started high school, I remember thinking to myself that I didn't want to go to college. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew I didn't want to go to college. And that was kind of the beginning of the journey of trying to figure out who is Kevin. And if there was no external influence on Kevin, who would he end up being? And that was a very, very interesting time in my life, trying to figure all that out, you know, at 15, 16 years of age, when you don't really know much. I won't say you don't know anything, but I definitely didn't know much at that age.
Yes, yes. And I feel like that is a common age for us to sort of be questioning those things, maybe even for the first time, of just like, who am I? And what do I really want to do with my life? And all of those outside pressures of, well, you should be doing this. And, you know, if you want to make money, got to go to college. All of those societal expectations that can weigh down on us, and truly the self-discovery process that is part of what it means to be an adolescent, Erikson's psychosocial stages of development. The whole point of adolescence is to figure out who we are, but all too often we do have those expectations of who we're supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a challenge, because I remember going to the guidance counselor's office, and they were like, okay, these are the colleges that you'll probably get into. Like, this is the pricing. This is what you should have written on the resume and the cover letter and all that stuff. And I remember thinking, like, I don't want to do that. And I don't think a lot of people wanted to do that. I just think, to your point, a lot of people got pushed. And it's like, well, you know, everybody in your family went to college. I'm very lucky because nobody in my family went to college. So I didn't really have that internal push going. That is one thing I've always had. I've always had a very, very supportive family who just wanted me to be happy. So when everybody else was figuring out where they were going to go to college, and, you know, all the my friends went to the same college and other friends went to the same college, I got a job at a local gas station, and I started pumping gas when I think I was like 15 or 16. And that for me was like the first real job I had ever had. But that for me was the beginning of a self-discovery journey from the place of this. Everybody else was out making memories and taking pictures. I mean, Facebook and those apps were very new, so everybody was living their best life on social media. And here I am waking up at, you know, 5 a.m. I'm driving down to the gas station and I'm working a full-time job from 6 a.m. until 2 p.m. And I had to get very, very familiar with my ego and very familiar with humility, because I remember a lot of the popular girls that I would have crushes on would come in and I would pump their gas and they would pay me no mind. And that didn't feel good necessarily. and I would have people that I went to high school with come in, and you know, they're crushing life and they're at college and they're doing all these things. And I just remember, I always felt not enough. And that has always been a theme in my life of no matter what I do, it's usually me. I'm usually my biggest critic. And I don't know if it stems from growing up without a dad and feeling like he abandoned me because of me, but that's always been a big struggle for me, is I just don't feel enough. Even today with the level of quote unquote success, I still have those moments. And I always want to be very, very transparent about that. So I kind of got sick of the gas station after like 3 or 4 years. And I was like, all right, it's time for me to move on. Like, what can I do here? What can I do that's going to move me toward a life, a career, money, just move me toward an evolution? And I ended up training martial arts. So I wanted to be a professional fighter. So I was doing that on the side. I ended up getting hurt. And when I was hurt, I said, you know what I want to do? I want to be a personal trainer. I'm into fitness. I've been exercising for, you know, the last 6 years, whatever it is. Like, I really want to get into being a personal trainer. I love helping people. I can't think of a more rewarding job than helping people. So when my shoulder healed from an injury that I had training, I went to my boss and I said, hey, just a heads up. I'm going to be looking for a new job. I just wanted to give you a heads up so you'd have time to find somebody. And then I got a call the next day and they fired me. So I lost my job at the gas station. And then I had to find another job, because at that point in my life, I had a car, I had bills, I had to figure out how to make ends meet. So I ended up going to a hospital. And I had this interview with somebody who was the head of the project department. And all that really meant was I was in the housekeeping department. So I ended up getting a job on third shift, and I would clean rooms, I would clean floors, I would clean bathrooms. And that was a job that I had for like a year and a half. And that was another interesting time for me, Courtney, because it's the same level of not enoughness, where you go into a room and not all the doctors or nurses were this way, but you're kind of the bottom of the pyramid. You're kind of the bottom of the barrel, and you don't get treated very well. And I remember there was this beautiful nurse who I had a crush on, and her and I ended up hanging out a couple of times, but it was really hard for me to connect with her because I felt like I was just in a different class of employment there. So there's a theme in my life of kind of always getting somewhere and then feeling like I'm getting looked down on, and then trying to figure out, what does that mean for me? What is the perspective I can take from that experience? How do I empathize with the person who's looking down? That's been a very, very interesting journey and a very, very interesting theme in my life, honestly.
Yes. And that feeling of not enoughness, I feel like it's something that has probably always been present throughout history. Especially like classism was once a lot more prominent maybe than it even is now. Mm-hmm. But I feel like social media has just exacerbated that. It's yeah. just made it so easy to hop on and look at all these people who have more money or more fame or, you know, a better job or a better car. And it is something that we do naturally with our minds, because we love comparison. We love categorization. It feels safe to the mind. But I always say to my clients, comparison is the thief of all joy. So it's impossible to have gratitude when I'm constantly comparing myself to other people. Mm. And truthfully, I feel like gratitude is what leads to abundance. So when we're in that state of that restrictive self-comparison and not enoughness, it's ultimately what prevents us from achieving more and stepping into more of that abundant state. Mm.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly, especially at least back then, social media wasn't what it is today. So it wasn't as hard. I just think for me, it was always, that was the lesson for me, is no matter how much you succeed or no matter the level of success you have, you should always treat people with respect. You should always treat people with kindness, and you should treat people with an energetic attitude and an energetic understanding that they're going to remember you when you leave. they're either going to remember you for the positives or they're going to remember you for the negatives. And I try to bring that with me everywhere I go. I think that's part of the legacy. A legacy is a lot more than what you leave when you pass on to wherever we go after this. A legacy is how you make people feel when you leave any situation. So that really, really, really stuck with me. I mean, from the gas station to the hospital and really feeling like I was looked down on, that really, really helped me understand a lot of things in life. And then, so this is like a theme for me. I work a job for like a year and a half, and then I just tend to like quit when I'm over it. That's just something I've always done. I don't know why it's that way, but when I'm done with something, I'm done with something and I got to go. So I end up finally getting my personal trainer certification when I'm working at the hospital. And I remember I applied to a bunch of jobs and I was like, all right, I'm going to be a personal trainer. Here we go. This is it. This is the next step in my life. This is what I'm going to do forever. Awesome. Let's do it. So I end up getting a job as a personal trainer at a very high income gym. It was a very private club where there was only three rooms in the entire gym and every client got their own room. So if I was training somebody, myself and my client would be in our own room. We had our own weights, our own mirror, our own equipment. It was very nice. It was a very, very high level studio. And I remember when I started, they said, okay, so we're going to have to train you to figure out how to sell and how to do all these things. So you have to sign a contract that says you're going to stay here for at least a year. And if you don't stay here for a year and you break the contract, you have to pay us $1,000. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be here forever. That's no problem. No issues at all. So we get like 6 months into this and I'm realizing pretty quickly that this is not the job that I thought it was. There is way more sales involved. It's not what I signed up for. And I actually got my pay cut twice because I wasn't making enough sales. So eventually it got to the point where I went in and said, look, I'm done. I did not sign up to be a personal trainer so I could make people feel bad and trick them into buying packages. That's not it for me. I'm out. And they said, just remember, if you do leave, you have to pay $1,000. And I said, cash or check, you let me know because I am absolutely done with this. So that was my short time as a personal trainer. Then I ended up leaving there. Again, I had no backup. I'm just trying to figure out what's next. I became a forklift operator and a truck driver for a couple of years, which I actually enjoyed very much, other than the fact that my schedule required long hours. But I really, really enjoyed being by myself and not having somebody look over my shoulder. That was a really, really big thing. And this is kind of like step one where you can start to connect dots. So I would be in the truck from like 6 a.m. until 2, 3, 4, 5 in the afternoon some nights. And I used to listen to the radio. I didn't really listen to music. I would listen to either like entertainment morning talk shows or I'd listen to sports talk radio. And I remember I had this thought where I said to myself, if I could talk into a microphone for like 4 hours a day, 5 hours a day, and that was my job, that would be pretty cool. And I used to listen to this show called The Hillman Morning Show. And it's based in Boston, and that'll come full circle after. So I end up doing this job for like a year and a half, and it's very clear that the people I'm working for don't necessarily care about my life because I'm working 12, 14 hour days, I'm working Saturdays, and there really is no expectation of having a personal life. So eventually I get to the point where I say, okay, I'm at an interesting point in life. I could do anything now. You know, I could try something new. Like, what do I want to do? If I could do anything, what would it be? And I landed on firefighter. I want to be a firefighter. I feel like that is one of the most noble things in the world you can do. Let me see what that entails. Let me see how to get that done. Okay. So I go to the town I live in and I say, hey, I'm looking to become a volunteer firefighter. What do I have to do? And they said, well, we actually have a class coming up and there's a spot left. If you want it, it's yours. I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is happening. So I end up quitting my job at the truck driving, forklift operating side of things. And then I am now without a job while I'm going through the fire academy, which was like 3 nights a week. One of the guys I went to the fire academy with had a contractor business. So he and I met, nicest guy in the world. He's filled with tattoos, used to be in like a screamo metal band, but the nicest person you will ever meet. And he said, Kev, what do you do for work? And I was like, oh, I'm actually in between jobs. I actually just left mine so I could do the fire academy. And he said, oh, interesting. Okay, I have a contractor business and we're flipping a house right now. do you know how to paint? Do you know how to do handiwork? And I said, honestly, no, not really, but I'm willing to learn if you're willing to teach me. So that's the job I worked when I ended up going through the Fire Academy. I ended up graduating the Fire Academy. And that was another interesting time because I had this very unique job opportunity in something called weatherization. So this was a time in my life where I really felt stuck. I mean, yeah, I have a certificate that says I'm a volunteer firefighter, and that's great. But becoming a full-time firefighter is just very, very challenging, especially when there are paramedics and there are veterans and police officers that might get first pull at the straw there. So I remember thinking this is a very important, interesting time in my life because I have no idea what I'm going to do for the next 20, 30, 40 years. So I ended up getting this very unique opportunity in an industry called weatherization. And I remember when I went to connect with this company, it was kind of like an interview. And they said, okay, so here's the thing. This job requires a lot of travel. And I was like, oh, for that reason, I must be out. Like, I can't do that. They said, but you're going to make anywhere from $40 to $60 an hour. And I was like, there is no possible way this is real. This cannot be a real thing. And they explained to me that, okay, this is what we do. We go into state-owned buildings. So we travel up and down the East Coast of the US and we work in schools, we work in police stations, we work in fire stations, town halls, anything state or government owned. We go in those buildings and we try to make them more energy efficient. So we work in the attics, we work on the windows, we work on the doors. Since we're working for the government or for the state, we get paid a certain rate. And I was like, oh, interesting. Okay. I said, all right, I'm interested in this. Let me know more. And they said, okay, we have a job coming up in a couple months. We'll reach out to you then. And I was like, there's no way this is real. It doesn't matter. So they end up reaching out to me a couple months later. And I go to this kind of like job interview and I help my potential boss move some stuff around this trailer, and I'm dirty and I'm dressed all nice and he's dirty. And he sits me down and he says, Kev, I know you haven't done this before, but you have a really good personality and I think you're going to fit in well with the team. We're starting a job in Delaware, which is like 8 hours from where I lived, in a couple of weeks. Do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So my boss, future boss, potential boss, calls me a couple of weeks later and says, hey, it's time to go. Are you ready to roll? And I said, yeah. So I ended up getting into a car with a man that I had met one time. We drove 8 hours from Boston to Delaware. I moved into a house that we rented with like six other people that I had never met. And then I proceeded to do a job that I had never done before. And I remember the first week I literally ate sandwiches and chips because I could only afford bread, deli meat, and chips because I was so broke at that point. And that's why like all this kind of came full circle for me. And that was a very important, interesting time in my life because I had a new level of responsibility I'd never had. That was number one. I'll never forget the first time I got a paycheck that was for like $2,000 for a week of work. I was like, this cannot be real. So that became the thing that I thought I was going to do forever. I found something that paid really well. It didn't matter that I didn't have a college degree. I had the significance of making a lot of money and looking successful. And that became something that I thought I was going to do that forever. That really became the thing that I thought was going to be my forever job.
And I think that what I'm hearing is that was maybe one of the first times that you really felt like you were enough, like you were making enough money. You were finally seeing like the realization of, hey, I don't have to go this path that all the other people did to make this kind of money. I got to do it on my terms in my own way. And that is a moment that I'm sure felt really empowering for you.
It did. It did. And I think the other part of it too was like, I won't say the other jobs or other opportunities I had didn't give me a lot of responsibility, but my boss gave me a credit card. He gave me the keys to one of our many work vans. He said, this is the hotel you're checking in. And this is the scope of work that you're going to perform. And I'm gone for a week. And that's it. I might not talk to my boss for the entire week. Sometimes I talk to the project manager every day. It was just this level of responsibility where it was just me. I would show up and eventually I would have a team that worked quote unquote under me that I would lead. And it was just this interesting thing where it's like, wow, this person really trusts me to show up, be consistent, be a good communicator. It was really, really, really important for me. I think the pitfall that I kind of fell into was when I started making really good money, I forgot about the fact that money couldn't fix the internal stuff. So I'll never forget when I was 25, that's when things really started to shift for me. When I was 25, I had what I think a lot of people would consider a successful life. My girlfriend was a model. I had a nice new apartment with my girlfriend. I had a sports car. I had a high paying job. I had just won a bodybuilding show. So I was in the best shape of my life. I quite literally had quote unquote everything. But internally, I was the least fulfilled I had ever been. I was the most anxious I had ever been. I was definitely hovering on depression. And I just wasn't able to pour into anybody else's cup because my cup was so empty. So one day my girlfriend came to me and she was very ambitious. And she said, I want to move across the country from New Hampshire to California. And I want to chase my dreams. I want to live in California. I've always wanted to live there. I love beaches. I love water. I want to move out there and start a business. And in my insecurity and in my scarcity, I gave her every reason in the world why she shouldn't do it. So as you can imagine, she ended up leaving me shortly thereafter. And that is exactly what she should have done. And for me, that was a time where I said, okay, my partner left me. I am broken. I'm at least 50% of the mistakes. I'm at least 50% of the failures in my relationship. What am I going to do about this? I dipped my toe into self-improvement and I started reading a couple books. Problem is, I thought to myself, you know what it is? If I make more money, all of my problems will go away. I just need to make more money. So I remember I said this next year, that it was 2016 was about to start. I said, this next year, I am going to make as much money as humanly possible. So I spent the next 10 months on the road because the majority of our contracts were on the road. And I would literally leave Sunday night. So I'd leave at like 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. I'd get to the hotel at, you know, 8, 9, 10 at night on Sunday. I'd work Monday to Friday. I'd leave the job Friday at 3 p.m. I drive 6 or 7 hours home. I get home at 10 p.m. on Friday, if I'm lucky, right? Sometimes we get home at like 2 or 3 in the morning. And then I would do the same thing. I'd put my suitcase in the washer. I'd take it out, put it in the dryer, and then I put my clothes back in the suitcase and boom, Sunday comes, I'm off again. So I did that for 10 months, but I ended up getting to the end of the year and I had my final pay stub in hand. And I opened it up and I made $100,000 at 26 with no college degree. And I said, oh my goodness, I made it. And then I had this very interesting fleeting moment where I realized that for most of my life, I had lived unconsciously. And I said, what's the opposite of unconscious? The opposite of unconscious is hyperconscious. So a few weeks later, maybe a month later, I started a podcast called the Hyperconscious Podcast. And that was a very pivotal moment for me. Because I fell in love with podcasting as I fell out of love with my job. I made it to the top of the quote unquote mountain and I didn't want to go back. I'm not willing to trade 10 months of my life on the road to make this kind of money. It's just, it's not worth it to me. I don't want to do that. So I am now loathing my job. I cannot stand it. I hate it. And I have to pack up and drive however many hours it is. Right. That the next year we ended up driving 14 hours to Virginia and I lived in Virginia for a couple months and I was just out of it. I knew that the light at the end of the tunnel was not bright enough for me to want to do it. So my attitude around my job really changed. I started calling out. I'd start leaving the job site early. I'd start showing up late. It just was miserable. It was miserable. And it eventually got to the point where I just felt so stuck and I felt so trapped and I was depressed and I was anxious and I was not sleeping enough and I was eating like garbage. I woke up in a hotel room in New Jersey, which is like 6 hours from where I lived at the time. My alarm clock went off at 5:15, whatever it was. I sat up, I slid to the edge of the bed and I was lacing up my work boots that morning. And the best way to explain it is it was like there was 10 televisions on in my head at the same time and every single one was on a different station. And one is saying you're stuck here forever. People like you don't get opportunities like this. Never mind quit opportunities like this. If you do work up the courage to leave this, what are your friends going to think? What is your family going to think? Your family looks up to you. And if you do work up the courage to leave, what are you going to do? We're going to do this podcast thing? I don't really think it's going to work that way. And in that moment of despair and scarcity, I thought to myself, if I take my life, I take my problems with me. And that, unfortunately, was not the first time I had gone through that thought process. So I remember I reached out to somebody who was very into self-improvement. He's just somebody who had a lot of wisdom, somebody who I thought might have the answers to questions I was thinking. And he's my business partner now, which, again, it comes full circle. So I reached out to him and I said, Alan, I'm struggling, man. You know, I'm having these thoughts, I'm having these feelings, I'm having these emotions. I don't know what to do. Like, what am I supposed to do? And he said, Kev, over the last couple of years, your awareness has changed a ton, but your environments have remained the same. I think it's time for you to change your environment. So I ended up leaving that job 3 or 4 months later and then starting to become a full-time podcaster and entrepreneur. And that was 2017. In 2018, I left my job and I started this journey full-time, thinking that I was going to have to learn a lot about being an entrepreneur and business and all that, not understanding that the thing I was going to learn the most about was myself. And that was a very, very challenging thing. One of the most humbling things, but also one of the most powerful as well.
And I know that I can relate so much to that moment that you described and sitting on the edge of your bed and just having, I always think of it as like all these open tabs and I'm like, I don't understand why this is happening. You know, I had a moment like that when I was working in a very toxic work environment and I loved my job. I loved the people that I had the privilege of treating, but it was weighing on my soul. And a few months before I quit, I had received the biggest bonus I had ever been given. I had another raise coming up and they had me in golden handcuffs for a while. And there was a night where I was driving home. I was working full-time in an acute setting, in a hospital setting. And then I was also working part-time doing private practice in the evening. And I was driving home and all of a sudden I just started sobbing. And I couldn't figure out why at first. I didn't understand why I felt that way. But it's funny how often those moments of just kind of like bottoming out a little bit and coming to that place of darkness ultimately is what leads to a huge breakthrough. Life is very cyclical. It's very circular in some ways. And if you think about it in that way, at some point, the bottom becomes the way back up. Mm. And for me, I too stepped into what is full-time private practice, very much entrepreneurial within the therapist world, right? And I now have a bunch of different offerings and different groups and things that I run. And that moment was incredibly scary. And yet I don't think that any of what has happened since would have been possible had it not been for that moment. Mm. So I'm curious if you too agree with that. Do we need to sort of have this dark night of the soul or this rock bottom before we can have a true breakthrough?
Yeah, it's such an interesting question. I think we need necessity. And I think necessity can take many, many different forms, but it's almost like, you know, if you were to put your hand into, yeah, okay, let's do this. If you were to put your hand on the stove, if you don't turn on the stove, there's no necessity to take your hand off. If you turn it on very low, there might not be enough necessity. But if you crank the heat, there's necessity and you need to remove your hand because it's necessary or your hand will burn. I think a lot of us were stuck kind of in this warm middle. We call it the pain pleasure pendulum. You might go into work on a day and it might be the worst day you've ever had. But if you wait till Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you know, then the weekend comes, the following Monday, the pain, potentially necessity for you to make a change has worn off. So I do. I think humans work really well when we have necessity. And if we don't have necessity, there's no facilitation of change. I mean, there's no reason to change. if you're warm, you don't need to have to, you don't have to figure out a way to get warm. You know, if you're freezing, you have to figure out a way to get warm. So there's some sort of necessity there. So yeah, I think it doesn't have to be to the level of maybe a rock bottom suicidal ideation or, you know, some sort of life or death moment. But when you hear many stories, it is that oftentimes it's my life flashed before my eyes and I was ashamed of how I lived it. That's necessity. All right. My business partner got in a car accident when he was 26 and that changed his life. I had my suicidal ideations at 26. That changed my life. So I think it's necessity. It's not necessarily maybe the rock bottom, but there has to be some level of necessity that gets you to question, why am I living the way I'm living? That's what I would say. Yeah.
Well, and that brings me to the quote around change, which is, people change when the pain of remaining the same finally outweighs the fear of change. Mm.
Yeah.
And, you know, that pain probably looks different from person to person. Some people are a lot more tolerable. Some people can keep their hand on that hot stove for a lot longer, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, maybe others are kind of a little bit more attuned and are able to recognize its time a little bit sooner, or that necessity, that threshold might be a little bit lower. But I do find time and time again, both with my work, with my clients, my guests on the podcast, my friends and family, that for a lot of people, that moment of, my God, I cannot continue to live like this anymore. And awareness, that's where it starts, right? I have to be aware of the fact that I'm in pain. And I know that you have a lot of wisdom to share around awareness. And I would love for you to share some of that with us.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it very much. Yeah. It's your point. I mean, nothing can change until you're aware of the fact that it needs changing. And I just think, I don't know, there's so much opportunity for growth and for learning and for knowledge and for lessons out there. But I think so much of what we need is buried in us. And all I mean by that is, there's a lot of stuff for us to unlearn. So my example for that is always this. If you're somebody who wants to make more money, there's many ways to do it. You could Google, how can I make more money, right? The problem is, the advice that you're getting is not necessarily going to land at the identity level if you grew up in a household without a lot of money and you have a money block. So until you're aware of, oh, the internal systems that I'm running are affecting my external life in ways that I cannot comprehend yet, it's very hard to make progress. There is a million how-to videos out there, right? How to do this, how to do that. And that's awesome. And I think that's powerful, and that's potential power, and that's potential change. But until we realize the internal state of, okay, why do I get insecure around people who are ahead of me? Oh, because I don't feel good enough. Okay, where does that come from? Oh, maybe it's because my dad wasn't there. Okay, interesting. Was that actually my fault? Well, no, I was a baby. I didn't have any say in that. That wasn't up to me. Okay, interesting. Now, let me just continue to pull at that string. And now at least let me be conscious of that every time I get one of those not enough moments. Just a friendly reminder, Kev, this is all based on something that isn't real. This is all based on a limiting belief that you didn't have any influence on. And if you keep living your life that way, you're going to continue to get the results that you've gotten. So I just think one of the most powerful questions in the world, and one of the things that really, really, really helped me at the beginning, and I know it probably sounds too simple, I would just ask myself, why? Why do I feel comfortable around certain people? One of the interesting things for me, Courtney, I would say, why do I feel more comfortable around women than I do men? And I think one of the reasons is, number one, I was raised by women. Number two, women tend to have far less ego than men, and there's far less toxic masculinity. So I don't think it's a coincidence that our audience is primarily women, even though it's two masculine men who created the business and the podcast. So that has come full circle for me, where when I asked myself that question, it was, well, because I feel safe around women, and I feel like it's my opportunity, I won't say responsibility, but also to make them feel safe around me. Interesting. Why? Well, maybe I was, you know, maybe because I was raised by women. Maybe because I've heard so many stories of women being mistreated, and I don't ever want to be that. Okay, interesting. So I guess the shortest form of this is, there is a layer beneath everything. So you can show up And you can say, you know, this person's too much for me. They're either too energetic. They have too much self-belief. They have too high a level of self-worth. That's layer one. But the question underneath that is, what does that mean to you? Right? From an awareness perspective, why is that happening in the way it's happening? Is there something there for you to learn? Okay. When you get that, right? Okay. Well, maybe I'm not as confident in myself as I need to be. Interesting. Why? Okay. Because every time I have an opportunity to step up, I don't. Why? I'm so afraid of rejection. Why? Because when I was young, I remember raising my hand in class and I got made fun of. Interesting. Okay. So yeah, I just think if you can dig to the next layer and the next layer and the next layer, I think you just become more powerful as a human being because you start to understand yourself at a deeper level. And then when you understand yourself at a deeper level, I really believe you can understand everything at a deeper level.
Yes. Yes. And it is that understanding that is the first step in the cycle of change. You know, change is also circular. Mm. But we have to start with that awareness, and then we have to start planning and taking action and understanding that yes, awareness is important, but beyond that is action, right? Mm-hmm. What are the next things that I need to do? What is the next right step in this moment? So I am curious around, you know, what were the things that you actually did? Like, what were the action steps for you? What were the tools? What were the strategies, Kevin, that brought you to the next level?
Yeah. One of the first things I ever did was I started tracking habits, and I can't take credit for this. My business partner really, really helped me with this. And at this point we were tracking our habits on flashcards, but in the very beginning, I sat down and I asked him, I said, like, what should I be doing? And he said, well, every day you should do something under health, something under wealth, and something under love. And I was like, all right, I don't know what any of that means, but all right, let's give it a shot. So I would learn for 30 minutes every day. And I haven't missed a day in, I don't know how many years, 5-6 years at this point. I'm always learning. I'm learning something new. So I learned for 30 minutes a day. I would track my weight. I would track my bank balance. I would write gratitudes. And then I would do something I called quantum journaling, where I would just write, I am grateful for the things that I'm grateful for things that I don't have yet, but I'm just tricking my mind into thinking I have them already. So I am grateful for my amazing relationship. I am grateful for 10 paying clients. And it's interesting because, you know, I focused on those things, then obviously took action on them. And then I started to get those things. So in the very beginning, and to this day, tracking my habits has been instrumental in my growth and my success and my awareness. I went from 5 habits at the beginning to, I think it's 26 or 27 habits a day now. Again, I know that's an overwhelming number. So in the beginning, it's start small, start sustainable, but it's just given me a really good understanding of why do I have the results I have? More importantly, why don't I have the results I don't? I can point to it. I only went to the gym 12 times last month. Interesting. Okay. That's less than I have in the past. Naturally, I'm not going to get more results from that. That was very, very, very important. And I think the other thing too was I tried to be curious. And when I say curious, I'll just say I tried to be confidently curious, where at the end of the day, we're all going to get feedback, right? You're either going to get feedback along the way, or you're going to get it all at once at the end. And I tried to get as much feedback as I could, where whether it's hanging out with somebody who's way ahead of me or just saying, hey, if I could do that better, what would you recommend? You know, having those people around me that I could trust to give me valuable feedback, that was really, really important for me. That was really big. And then I think the last thing, I do a lot of reflection. So when I'm either really low emotionally or really high emotionally, I'll go back and watch old content of ours. Now, I understand not everybody has old content, but you can look back at old pictures. And one of two things is going to happen. You're going to say, damn, I've come a long way, or interesting, I haven't made as much progress as I'd hoped. That's awareness. And then from there, you can kind of make that change. So that's something that's really helped me, is just making sure I reflect, because we tend not to understand change until the contrast is great enough. But if you can look for contrast, I think you can kind of recognize that change sooner. And then just a tactical thing for people, if you're listening and inspired by this, after you listen to this episode, whatever it is, if you're driving, obviously don't do it. But at some point today, take out your phone and either record an audio note to yourself or record a video of yourself and explain to yourself, okay, it is April or whenever you're listening to this. I am X years old. This is what I'm doing with my life. This is how fulfilled I feel. This is how happy I feel. These are the things I'm grateful for. This is the stuff I'm ambitious to get. Kind of have a little autobiography of how your life is going and then check in with that 6 months from that day and see what's changed. I think that's a really wonderful exercise because it helps you create contrast intentionally. And I think if you do it intentionally, you're probably in more control of it.
Absolutely. Yes. I know that I read Atomic Habits by James Clear. And that was one of the turning points for me. And I very much relate to the habit building. We are our habits essentially, right? Our life becomes what our habits facilitate. Mm-hmm. And that is an incredible tool. We have to keep track of those. And self-reflection cannot be understated. I want to underscore that like three times here. Like we have to have moments of self-reflection, whether that is like a voice memo or a journal that you keep, whatever you need to do to sort of keep track of your progress. I know I keep a journal and I always say that I write little love notes for myself. And it's so interesting to come back 6 months later, a year later, and read something and just have it speak to me and know that that in that moment was written for me at the present. Yeah. So I love that idea as well with the voice memos, because I know plenty of people I talk to are like, I'm not a journaler, you know, which is fine. You don't have to be.
It's easier. It's easier just to talk into your phone.
Yeah.
At least for me.
A little bit less involved and more spontaneous, right? You don't have to really carve out any specific time. You can just sort of do it in the moment.
Yeah.
But all right, Kevin, well, why don't you tell our audience how they can follow you or if they're interested in working with you or learning more about you, how can they do that?
Yes, I appreciate it. My recommendation, and I always say this, is just check out our podcast because you'll learn very quickly one of two things, either A, we're your type of people, or B, it's not for you. Either way, no hard feelings. I love you either way. Just search Next Level University. We're on all the podcast platforms. We're on YouTube. We just crossed 1,300 episodes last week. We do an episode every single day. So that is our brand, self-improvement in your pocket every single day from anywhere on the planet, completely free. That is why what I would recommend. If you do want to reach out to me personally, just shoot me an email, kevin@nextleveluniverse.com. I do my own email, so I will give you a response.
Wonderful. And any last words of wisdom that you could leave the audience with? Maybe what was your biggest lesson, or how would you encourage somebody who is still along their healing journey?
Yeah, I would say give it time. I think a lot of us, myself included, fall into the instant gratification thing. And there are just certain things you cannot cook faster. There's certain things you cannot build faster. There's certain things that you cannot reveal faster. I would say give yourself grace, be very patient, and understand this. Self-awareness, self-uncovering, just understanding yourself at a deeper level, self-improvement, growth, all of that is a lifetime game. It's going to happen forever. So you have a lot of time to get to know yourself. So don't beat yourself up if you don't know exactly who you are. You don't know exactly what your purpose is. You don't know exactly your triggers and your traumas yet. There's a lot of time to get to know that. So I would throw out the fact that direction is far more important than speed. A direction of you getting a little bit better or understanding yourself a little bit more every day, that direction is far more important than you learning everything in one day. Because, you know, small things add up over time. And if you do the small things long enough, they turn into big things.
I love that so much. I feel like the fast-paced culture that we live in creates this false sense of urgency. And there is no way to rush this type of work. This is certainly a very long process as far as healing. And I love that
concept of direction, and rather than speed being the most important factor there. So
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming onto the pod. I know that I was inspired by your interview, and my listeners will be as well. So thanks again for coming by Nonlinear Healing with Courtney Brook.
My pleasure. Thank you, Courtney.
Wow, everybody. I hope that you enjoyed Kevin's interview today. Please don't forget to share this episode with others if you were inspired. We also ask, if you haven't already, to please leave a review for the show on whatever platform you're listening from. That's what helps the algorithm push the show out to others and help to spread this awareness and encourage people along their nonlinear healing journey. So thanks again for tuning in this week to Nonlinear Healing with Courtney Brook.